Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Radio Show, where we talk about the cross of the environment, our health, and longevity with Richard Talk to Me Guy, and Sherry Edwards is off working on the Sound Health Portal. I would suggest going to soundhealthportal.com, scrolling down just a bit, and clicking on the Watch How button. You'll see a short video explaining how to record and submit your first vocal recording. Then go back to soundhealthportal.com, scroll down to current active campaigns, such as cellular inflammation, memory, or biodiet, and choose one that is of interest for you. Click on that campaign and click free voice analysis, and the system will walk you through submitting your recording. You'll receive an email with your report back usually in 1 to 2 hours. To hear and share replays of this show, 30 to 40 minutes after you hear the outro music, go to talktomeguy.com. Scroll down that page and you'll see the show at the top of the episodes page. There are also hundreds of hours of shows available there as well. There's a microphone icon at the bottom right corner of all the show notes. If you'd like to, leave me a voice message with a question for a guest or a guest idea for a show. You can do that directly from the site and I will be notified. With that, conventional weight loss approaches include reducing caloric intake, GLP-1 agonists, and bariatric surgery. While these conventional weight loss strategies may have short-term success, most times the weight returns after the dieting stops. These conventional weight loss methods impair health and shorten lifespan. They result in muscle loss and a preferential loss of subcutaneous fat over the more harmful visceral fat, fat surrounding organs. Typically, 25% of weight loss in these conventional weight loss approaches is from loss of muscle mass. The muscle mass is necessary to keep our metabolic rate and the ability to burn calories at a good rate. William Davis, MD, is a cardiologist and a number one New York Times bestselling author of the Wheat Belly series of books and more recently, Supergut. Recent human clinical trials that Dr. Davis conducted have revealed that it is possible to lose fat, weight, while preserving muscle, thereby preventing weight regain and enjoying improved body composition. Dr. Davis is also the chief medical officer at Realize Therapeutics Corporation, which he co-founded to explore the new science of microbiome to improve health and appearance, including products for improving skin and health vitality as well as body composition. Dr. Davis joins us to discuss the GLP agonists and their effects on health and weight. Welcome, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Richard. Glad to be back.
I know. I was really quite shocked when I went back and looked at some show notes just to sort of refresh everything in my mind. And I realized the first time we talked is in 2013.
Was it really?
It was like,
wow.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I feel like. Really? Wow, man. It is that thing where the old guys are on the park you're going, wow, really? Time's just flying by, man. I can't believe it. It's really quite shocking. And now here you are, rabble-rousing about this. I think this is phenomenal that you're doing this, talking about these GLP-1 agonists and what I call now, from when I heard you talk about it, the Ozempic face syndrome. I'm going to be calling it that until people get it figured out. Because it really is, wow, it's shocking. I just, when I see the results of what it is and I read all your material, it just makes so much sense of, like, what are people thinking? That's really where I land, is like, what are people thinking? It's not a great look. At some point, it's not a great look. So please talk to us about this GLP agonist, Ozempic.
Sure, Richard. So there's a class of drugs called so-called GLP-1 agonist drugs. And these were originally intended to reduce blood sugar in diabetics, type 2 diabetics. But they also observe incidentally that people lost a lot of weight. And so now they're being deployed for losing weight. So these drugs like Ozempic, as you point out, Mounjaro, Wegovy, and a bunch of others. So let's say somebody takes one of these drugs at a cost of about $12,000 per year. And let's say this person loses 40 pounds, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves, even though, as you point out, they look typically 10 to 20 years older because their face has lost muscle and subcutaneous fat, fat just below the skin. So you may be thinner, but you look older. But of that 40 pounds lost, 25%, or about 10 pounds lost, is muscle. This is well-established fact. It's been shown over and over again in clinical trials. So think about that, Richard. 10 pounds of ground beef on your kitchen table.
Wow.
It's a lot of muscle. So you lose 10 pounds of muscle if you lose 40 pounds total. Well, most people can't afford these drugs forever, so they stop the drug. And this person regains 32 to 34 pounds, of which virtually all of it is fat. Now, they're more prone to type 2 diabetes, heart disease, dementia, breast cancer, and other conditions than they were at the start. So pharma gets enriched, and you end up being less healthy and low self-esteem, dissatisfied with the outcome. Yet my colleagues to this day say, oh, these are miraculous breakthroughs, and the FDA approved these drugs without any understanding of the long-term outcomes.
It seems like it's leaving people in a sarcopenia-like condition.
Yes, exactly right. That's right. So sarcopenia, for your listeners, is a situation as we get old. So just by aging, we lose about a third of our muscle, sometimes a lot more, some people 50%. And that's a situation called sarcopenia. You've seen these little old ladies and guys with skinny arms and legs. They can't navigate stairs. They have a hard time carrying their grocery bags. They have a hard time getting in and out of the car. And you're less likely to be independent. You become dependent on the system, facilities for your to live, like assisted living. And you're more prone to fractures and frailty and other health conditions. And so we do not want to lose muscle. So when you lose all that muscle because you took that drug, it compounds the 30% or more of muscle you lose just by aging. Now, the great thing, Richard, is we know of ways. And in fact, I discovered a way to stop that effect, not with the drug so much, but on your own. We have access to ways to preserve or rebuild muscle safely and effectively.
I feel like a drum roll is needed here. because it's really, I actually, part of the reason I know the word sarcopenia is because 12 years ago I had about 30 hours of surgery, blah, 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 blah. The audience doesn't need to hear it again. And since that time, I've had sarcopenia. And I used to have muscular, I was a chef for 20 years and a bicyclist and a weightlifter. So I lost muscle mass in my arms and I haven't gotten it to return. So as I was studying for this show, I was thinking, oh my God, I might have arms again. That'd be so exciting. So please, yes, talk about I feel like L. Ruderi comes in here. I'm just guessing.
Yes, exactly right. So conventional thinking is you must go to the gym for many hours a week. But, you know, most of us don't want to do that, don't like to do it. I certainly do not. And there are a handful of supplements like hydroxymethylbutyrate and creatine kinase. Those things do help a little bit, but we want big effects. And one of the biggest effects is, as you point out, restoring a microbe that nearly everyone has lost, Lactobacillus reuteri. You know, if we looked at the indigenous hunter-gatherer populations in Kenya or Tanzania or the jungles of South America or the highland jungles of New Guinea, that is hunter-gatherer humans, they all have this microbe, Lactobacillus reuteri. If we were to look at the gastrointestinal microbiome of mammals, wild mammals like wolves or bear or deer, they all have reuteri also, but we've lost it because we've been so widely overexposed to antibiotics and other factors like glyphosate and the herbicide Roundup and many other factors. We've lost, almost everybody has lost Lactobacillus reuteri. Well, Lactobacillus reuteri is a microbe that takes up residence in your GI tract and sends a signal to your brain to release the hormone oxytocin, the hormone of body composition. It is in charge of how much muscle you retain, how much fat you have in your abdomen, as well as many other facets of health, such as the intensity of love and affection you have for the people close to you, your libido, your sexual drive, muscle density, your capacity to heal, your immune response, and how happy you are. So we restore this microbe and all sorts of wonderful things happen, including an increase in lean muscle mass. This all came to light, especially recently. We did a small human clinical trial. Now, the ladies in my audience say things like this. When I told them what would happen, they said, oh, we don't care about muscle, and we don't care about healing or immune response. We just want better skin. So I thought, what? So, oh, fine. Okay, fine. So I did a small human clinical trial on 25 ladies, and we made measures of skin, such things as a high-resolution skin ultrasound, and we did record a dramatic increase in dermal thickness, 15%, which is more than twice as much as you get, say, with just collagen peptides. So we show a dramatic increase in dermal thickness. It's the dermis, Richard, that determines skin health and appearance. What we see on the outside is the epidermis of dead cells, but it's the layer just beneath the dermis that is the principal driver of skin health and appearance. Well, we got a 15% increase in dermal thickness and moisture, and the ladies were thrilled because they lost their crow's feet, they lost their smile lines between the eyes, and some of the other wrinkles started to recede over 90 days, over 3 months. But the unexpected thing in this preliminary trial was that these ladies lost a huge amount of waist circumference, average of 3 inches, as much as 8.5 inches. Now, we asked them specifically, Richard, please don't change your diet. Please don't change your exercise program, if you even have one. And so they did this. They just got Rotary, and I threw in a few other things. I threw in marine-source collagen peptides, hyaluronic acid, and astaxanthin. These are things, Richard, absent or lacking in the modern life, because we've been told this ridiculous message to cut fat and cholesterol, and most modern people thereby abandon consumption of organ meats rich in collagen and hyaluronic acid. And of course, too many people get their food served to them through a drive-through window or in a clamshell delivered by a food delivery service. And these are foods you don't know how it was prepared, often does not have many of the nutrients we want, but specifically relevant to body shape and composition, carotenoids. And the most potent, like beta-carotene, lutein, zeaxanthin, but the most potent carotenoid of all is astaxanthin. Pardon me. That's the pink or orange color in salmon and lobster and crab. So we combine these four components, said to the ladies, please just get these four components. Don't change your diet. Don't change your exercise. And they lose a huge amount of abdominal fat. But even more, they did not lose much in the way of weight. So consistent with the animal evidence, consistent with my large evidence, we're gaining muscle. I personally, Richard, when I started doing this a number of years back, I gained 13 pounds of muscle over 3 weeks, and my strength increased by 50%. I was handling weight that I was handling last in my 20s. And I go to the gym, Rich. I don't know about you. I can't stand going to the gym. I don't like it. So I go 15 minutes tops once a week to use the machines, get the heck out. And despite that minimal effort, I gained 13 pounds of muscle, strength increased. So I think we have stumbled by accident. That's the great thing about this, Richard. This was an accident. I did not know that people would specifically lose abdominal fat and regain lost muscle.
Well, and I think the once again, I wish I had a laugh track sound effect, because the thing is that, as you said, the women, and I'm not, and this is no derogatory comment at all, the trial was with women, were all so thrilled at the idea of their skin improving. That was, I think, really their preliminary, immediate thing was, you're going to make my skin look more youthful and my crow's feet are going to go away? I'm in. And the
well, you know,
the
great thing also is that, so it's the opposite. Richard, it's the opposite of this so-called Ozempic face phenomenon. Yeah. You take a GLP-1, you look older. We do this thing, we preserve youthful muscle, we lose abdominal fat, and these ladies – not uncommonly look 10 years younger, 20 years younger, with loss of wrinkles. There's also a loss of redness and blemishes and protection from sun injury. Skin's very susceptible to sun injury. And so we're seeing the exact – now, here's a tempting question. I'm not a friend of pharma, nor are you. I know that. But what if we took these people who are taking these GLP-1 agonists and said, hey, do these things that we're talking about alongside, concurrently – could we block the loss? Because it's loss of muscle that causes weight regain. So what if we did these things concurrently? Could we block the muscle loss effect and give that person who spent $12,000 to lose 40 pounds, can we give this person a way to get off the drugs safely without becoming a type 2 diabetic or increasing their risk for cognitive impairment and dementia and heart disease? So we're looking for a partner in that world who wants to – because we don't have the kind of budget that pharma does. Hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to do these things. So we'd like to see if we can do partner with one of those companies, because it may be a way out. Because I predict, Richard, that when people see just how much their health is destroyed by GLP-1 agonists, there's going to be a whole flood of class action suits against these companies, both pharma and telehealth companies dispensing them and clinics. Well, what if we have a way that allows that person to take advantage of some of the benefits of these drugs and not have to be exposed to long-term decline or downturn in health?
Mm-hmm. And what if they, do you think that it's, I mean, you've had, I imagine you've had people that have done something like Ozempic and then have done your formula and seen positive benefit. Once they're in that sort of what I call the sarcopenia cycle, do you feel that this formula will take them out of that because it's helping the body rebuild muscle mass and it's helping the body become balanced in the form that it wants to be in?
You know, Richard, this is so preliminary that we have not yet had a chance beyond a few anecdotes to really assess this formally. And that's why we really need to do this formally. You don't want me to take my word for it. But I think theoretically, it makes sense. I don't know if it will completely block the loss of muscle and thereby weight regain, or if it will simply blunt it. But if we could find a way to at least start that conversation, find a partner to conduct that clinical trial. But, you know, even outside the world of GLP-1 agonists, we have stumbled on a way to preserve youthful shape and body composition. So throw these ideas, that is the restoration of this lost microbe, lactobacillus rotori, restoration of factors missing from your modern life, collagen, hyaluronic acid. By the way, Richard, hyaluronic acid is so interesting. It's a fiber. Now think about that. Mm. It's a fiber that does not come from plants. Most fibers come from plants. Hyaluronic acid is a fiber that comes from animals, mostly brain, skin, and tongue. So when we've abandoned organ meats, we've also abandoned largely the intake of hyaluronic acid. And hyaluronic acid is wonderful for skin. A lot of ladies know about applying topical hyaluronic acid as a serum around their eyes, say, and they lose some of the crow's feet. And then, of course, the hyaluronic acid washes off at night with their skin routine. But I ask ladies, okay, you apply around your eyes. What did that hyaluronic acid serum do for the skin on your neck or abdomen or thighs? Nothing, of course, because it's topical and local. So let's take hyaluronic acid orally. It acts as a fiber. It goes to the skin where it causes retention of water. It's extremely potent at retaining water, not like edema, but youthful moisture in the dermal layer of the skin. It also increases the lubricating fluid in your joints, like knees and hips, the synovial fluid. So it benefits joint health, and it stimulates regrowth of cartilage you may have been losing in your joint cartilage. And it's a fiber, and it nourishes and blooms some of the most beneficial species in your gastrointestinal microbiome. These are species like Fecalobacterium or Akkermansia that produce butyric acid or butyrate. And that, in turn, so hyaluronic acid blooms these beneficial microbes in the GI tract that in turn produce butyric acid. And the butyric acid, in addition to lowering blood pressure, lowering blood sugar, reducing insulin resistance, facilitating weight loss, also goes to the skin where it acidifies. Butyric acid acidifies the skin. Healthy skin is acidic. Unhealthy skin is much less acidic. There's about a tenfold difference in acidity between healthy and non-healthy skin. So someone with, say, psoriasis or seborrhea or acne or rosacea will have a pH of about 5.5, whereas healthy skin has a pH of about 4.5. pH scale is logarithmic, so that's a tenfold difference. So getting hyaluronic acid, for a long list of reasons, Richard, restores youthful, healthy skin with reduced blemishes, moister, thicker, smoother.
And I'm going to pause for a moment and jump back and ask, how did you're a this is not a derogatory crime, that may sound like it. You're a cardiologist. How did L-Ruteri come into your view, your life? Did you always have a interest in gut health, or was it something that occurred? Or is it L-Ruteri sort of like lit up for you, and it led you to, I think, probably in the early days of Wheat Belly and everything, it suddenly popped up in there. Where did L-Ruteri come into your life and sort of opened your whole mind to this idea of, wow, we could maybe have a different approach to what we're doing?
Well, it was all part of a evolution in my thinking, Richard, that I began many years ago. I began to reject this idea of, for instance, opening people's arteries with stents and bypass surgery, or giving people statin cholesterol drugs to reduce cholesterol, a useless exercise. So I started to ask tougher questions. And one of the things I asked is, what's the role of oxytocin? You know, oxytocin is regarded by most as being nothing more than the hormone that surges when you hug your child or your pet your dog. Well, that's true for a few seconds. But actually, oxytocin is proven to be the hormone of body composition. And the first illustration of this was from a series of really creepy Frankenstein-like experiments conducted by a scientist named Dr. Irina Convoy. And she was at Stanford, I think, and at Harvard. What was really crazy, what they did was they took an old rat and then cloned it. So now you have a young rat that's immunologically and genetically identical. And then she and her team connected their circulatory systems, their blood, and they watched the old rat become young. Creepy, right? And then they asked, what's the mediator? What factors are being transacted between young and old that gives the old mouse, and by the way, the young mouse gets old too, so it goes both ways. They narrowed it down. This is a work in progress, but the first factor they identified was oxytocin. And then there was a series of unrelated experiments at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Health, where they want to take advantage of the anti-cancer effects of rotarite. So we know that rotarite is a very potent anti-cancer microbe, including, by the way, marked reduction in colonic polyps. And so they started a series of experiments, but they noticed, oddly, that when the mice were given rotarite, they developed what they called rich and luxuriant fur within a week. So they explored this further. They shaved the hair off these mice, and their hair grew back half usual time. They inflicted skin wounds. Their wounds healed in half normal time. They saw a 300% increase in testosterone, a 400% increase in growth hormone. They watched old mice age, but never showed signs of aging. Old mice stayed young. And so I got the same microbe this group was playing with in mice. The crazy thing was this microbe was commercially available. It comes from Sweden, a company called BioGaia. But these tablets were made for infants, and this company had established through their clinical trials that restoration of rotarite in infants reduced regurgitation of breast milk and formula and accelerated recovery from diarrhea after Okay, important, but not that interesting. So I started to get this microbe, and because the dose was so small, I fermented it using my method of prolonged fermentation because, as you recall, Richard, microbes don't have sex. There's no mommy and daddy microbes, right? They just reproduce themselves. One becomes two. Two becomes four. So I allowed this microbe to double 12 times. Rotarite doubles every 3 hours at human body temperature. So we double it 12 times. We counted it using a method called flow cytometry. And we get around 300 billion. So we're increasing the original number 1,000-fold. And then I started talking about this. We're all making this as yogurt, as you know. And lo and behold, all the phenomena seen in mice, this often doesn't happen. But in this case, all the phenomena seen in mice are being mirrored in humans. Increased social behavior, increased sexual activity and libido, smoother skin, acceleration of healing, amplification of the immune response, rise in testosterone, preservation of youthfulness. We're seeing it in the face. We're seeing it in the musculature. We're seeing people how they walk, how they climb stairs. And so I stumbled on this series from preliminary work done by Irina Convoy and the MIT group. Now we're seeing it play out in humans.
And is there still work being done with the anti-cancer aspect of the L-rotari?
Is that
being used in the world?
Yeah, because the rotari has such potent anti-cancer. It's probably going to be a major factor in inhibiting colon cancer, you know, think about that, Richard. So almost everybody's lost rotarite and its anti-cancer effects.
Yeah, yeah.
So colon cancer, polyps, there hasn't been a lot of exploration outside of that kind of cancer, but rotarite is probably one of the most potent microbes. That, by the way, is reflective of what's going on in the general microbiome world, and that is a lot of cancer can be blamed on the microbiome. For instance, unrelated, different issue, but there's a microbe in your mouth, in our mouths, called Fusobacterium nucleatum. I'm going to love these names.
Wow.
But this microbe proliferates, especially if you have bleeding gums or gingivitis or periodontitis. Well, Fusobacterium has the capacity to enter your bloodstream. So when you floss or brush, any kind of micro trauma to the mouth, some of that Fusobacterium gains access into your bloodstream, and then it can implant itself in your colon where the evidence is good. It is a major driver of colon cancer. In other words, colon cancer in many instances gets its start in the mouth. So your gastroenterologist is interested in doing colonoscopies, ka-ching, 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 but fails to talk about your oral microbiome and dental hygiene and the presence of Fusobacterium. So this is going to change the entire approach to colon cancer prevention.
Wow. And is this, I'll put air quotes around, common knowledge? Is this something that's discussed in the medical industry and the dental world or any of those arenas?
As you know, Richard, this is going to sound terribly cynical, but most physician education is provided by industry. The sexy sales rep in a miniskirt in your office promising free dinner and a trip, all expense paid trip to Orlando. Sadly, most physicians, after their training is completed, really don't recognize the science very much. Now, it's not a serious effort. I'm generalizing, of course. And so a lot of this kind of breakthrough, brand new stuff in science, especially in the microbiome. And the microbiome is kind of complicated, right? So a cardiologist, my colleagues, or an endocrinologist, or a pulmonologist may say, that's not part of my training and education. I don't really need to know that stuff. What they're failing to recognize is everybody needs to be at least somewhat acquainted with the issues of the microbiome. Because, for instance, if colon cancer gets a start in the mouth, the dentist becomes a critical player in health. Another example, by the way, of the impact of oral health, the oral microbiome being second only to the colon in the density of microbes. There's a microbe called Porphyromonas that originates in the mouth and goes to the brain and is recovered in large numbers in people with dementia when they're dead after they pass. So there's a growing appreciation that dementia is a polymicrobial disease. There are other causes, of course, but it looks as if many microbes, both bacteria and fungal, play a role in the development of all sorts of neurocognitive disorders.
You know, in a curiously weird way, it kind of makes sense, having talked to you a lot and spent a lot of time looking at microbiome health and shows with Stephanie Seneff about glyphosate. She wrote, she's an MIT researcher who wrote the book on, not the gift that keeps on giving, but some title similar to that about glyphosate. How it's what a toxin it is, and how it's just everywhere. And so it makes sense that as we destroy the microbiome and we eat bad grains, we eat GMO grains or grains period, that we're going to stress out the microbiome, and nobody seems to be paying attention to it except for you, this cardiologist. And I mean that in the best of ways. It's always so shocking and great.
Excellent point, Richard, about the glyphosate that you and Stephanie Seneff are talking about. While we don't have human evidence, because no one, if I said to you, hey, Richard, I'm going to give you a pill, and it could be glyphosate, it could be placebo. We want to see if it ruins your health. You say, get lost. So we don't have that kind of evidence. We probably will never have it. But we do know, we do know that glyphosate, as you may know, is not just an herbicide. It's also an antibiotic. But it's a kind of antibiotic that tends to kill beneficial microbes like Lactobacillus reuteri, and is ineffective in killing fecal microbes like E. coli or Salmonella or Campylobacter. Those are the unhealthy species that proliferate when you have a disrupted gastrointestinal microbiome. So glyphosate essentially selects for unhealthy microbes.
Wow. And now they're using it as a defoliant so that when they go to harvest, let's say, wheat or some other grain, they spray it right away, or even corn, they spray it right before harvest because it's a defoliant, so that they've freshly sprayed it right before they harvest it for us.
Yes, yes. Horrible, horrible practice exposing us to this potent antibiotic. Right.
Yeah, yeah. No wonder we're, you know, we're thinking that Ozempic face is, you know, maybe good, or, you know, I don't know. No, that's the wrong thing. But I mean, just it all blows my mind about the glyphosate thing, that it just keeps happening. And it's like, it's okay. Mexico won't take our corn. Mexico will no longer take our corn because they don't want GMO sprayed glyphosate corn. And there's a big battle between the U.S. and Mexico because they're like, no, corn is important to us. It's just it's a bizarre and amazing thing.
You know, one of the great things about rebuilding muscle that you've lost is people, a lot of the ladies especially, will say things like this. Well, I don't want to go to the gym 6 hours a week. I don't want to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, don't worry, you won't. Nobody, even if you did go to the gym 6 hours, you wouldn't look like that. But what we're talking about is not so much that, like a bodybuilder type body shape. We're talking about restoration of the muscle you had when you were 25. Because if you're losing all that muscle, it was accelerated by doing something awful like a GLP-1 agonist drug or any other method, as you point out in the beginning of your opening notes. The GLP agonist, while it has some new effects, is really not that much different than cutting calories. We could call it move more, eat less. We could call it bariatric surgery, lap band. These are all variations in the same theme, cutting calories. And we know, this surprised a lot of my physician colleagues, we know with good confidence, good evidence, when you cut calories, regardless of the method, you will lose muscle. And muscle is the principal determinant of your metabolic rate. That is the rate at which you burn energy. There was a recent very enlightening study at the NIH, National Institutes of Health. They took people who are very big, BMIs of 50, obesity is 30 or greater. These people are 50. So these are the super obese people. They were put on a low-calorie diet. And I give these people credit. Over 6 months, they lost 127 pounds. Amazing, right?
Wow, that's amazing.
Of which 18% was muscle. And their metabolic rate plummeted. And they calculated how many calories these people could eat to block weight loss, 400 calories per day.
Wow.
In other words, essentially a starvation diet was required. And even worse, they're hungrier even after they regain the weight. So they're hungrier because they lost the weight. They maintain a low-calorie input. They regain all the weight. And here's the perverse thing about that. Because there's a distortion of appetite hormones like ghrelin and others, you're actually hungrier now after having regained the weight than you were at the start. So anybody who's been through cycles of yo-yo dieting knows it becomes tougher and tougher and tougher because you've lost muscle with each cycle and you've caused an increase in appetite hormones with each time. So the conventional method, you can see, Richard, is an absolute formula for disaster.
Well, everybody that I know, and I know a number of people who have either had lap band or some sort of severe need for weight loss, have had the experience exactly as you're talking, where they do it, they look great, they feel great, well, they feel great, air quotes, and then a year or two later, they're back to where they started, only probably now, because of the weight loss of muscle mass, they're even in worse shape because they're not able to burn as much fat. They're exactly in the cycle that you're talking about. It's horrific to watch.
You know, the TV show The Biggest Loser provided some fodder for all this. So once again, the NIH recruited a bunch of people who graduated from that TV show on the eighth season. And these are people who lost 50 pounds, 70 pounds, 130 pounds by reducing calories, often drastically, and up to 6 hours a day of strength training and aerobic activity. So extreme efforts. And that's why you see on the people on these shows breaking down, having nervous breakdowns and sobbing, because they're miserable. It's a miserable process. So they have to dog these poor people, but they succeed in losing weight. They leave feeling great. And as you point out, in the next year or so, they regain all the weight. So this NIH group formally assessed their metabolic rate and found that it had dropped by 27%. Now, the study only lasted 6 years after they finished the TV program. And even at 6 years, it was still present. They stopped the study, so it's at least 6 years the reduction in metabolic rate occurs, and this is what responsible for all that weight regain. And these people maintained a low-calorie diet and an exercise program, yet they regained all the way. So you got to give them credit for the dedication they had. But you can see the whole thing, the whole concept is wrong, and it ensures your failure. Well, that's why I encourage people to be smarter. Let's not cut calories in any form. Never cut calories. Maybe for a day or two, that's about it. But never cut calories for a prolonged period, meaning no GLP-1 agonists, no move more, eat less, no bariatric procedures. Like, eat all you want. Never limit calories. Never limit fat. But get rid of things that stimulate appetite, like gliadin-derived opioid peptides that come from wheat and related grains. When you eat more fat, like butter and olive oil and the fat on your pork, you're satiated, and you're satiated for extended periods. And then even better, Richard, you restore Rotari, thereby oxytocin. One of the effects of oxytocin I didn't mention is it suppresses your desire to snack. You walk right past that piece of cheesecake, and you don't give a crap. So it suppresses so-called hedonic eating. Now, put all those three things together. You are in magnificent control over appetite impulse, and you're rebuilding muscle.
And you're happier.
And you're
because
happy.
Because of the oxytocin levels. You're actually able to have a conversation with somebody you might not agree with about some things.
Excellent
I'll
point.
Just skip, yeah. I'll just skip along. I'll just skip along past what that could be. But there could be things you don't want to talk with people about, and you can actually have a dialogue and still disagree. What a radical idea. I love that.
That's my favorite part of this whole conversation. That is the emotional and social benefits of restoring Rotari and thereby oxytocin, the increase in the intensity of love and affection for the people close to you, the acceptance of other people's opinions, the increased generosity, the reduction in social isolation, maybe even a reduction in divorce. Who knows, right? You know, one thing I was not aware of until the last few years ago is that the psychology community has been formally tracking narcissistic behavior since 1963. And they've seen that narcissistic behavior has skyrocketed over those 60-some years. So in 1963, true or false, I am a very important person in this world. In 1963, 13% of people, yes, I am. In our time, 83%. Now, there may be other factors involved here, like social media and child rearing practices. But here's something we can do something about. Restore a microbe and the hormone of love and empathy and embrace your fellow human beings and accept them for what they are. Introduce yourself to strangers in line for coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah, that's radical. Especially for people who are needing caffeine. They're not chatty at all. I talk into a microphone for a living, and so I talk to everybody, always. I'm just a chatty guy. I'm not chatty, but I'm definitely conversational. And there are a lot of times where you can see that sort of glow in the eyes like, I cannot talk to you yet. All right, I'm sorry. But I think it's a radical idea. This is back to when COVID was happening, and that's a whole other conversation we're not getting into. But I was suggesting, look, couldn't we just give kids a vitamin C packet twice a day at school? What about that idea? Now I'm going to jump to, what if we just gave them, you know, in their school lunches? I'm old enough that I actually ate hot lunches at school. And what if you just got a little L-Rotari in there? Just a little every day to benefit, you know, everybody. Everybody might be happier. Wow. That could be a world revolution if everybody was just a notch up on the happier scale.
Richard, I think you are absolutely right. Sure, there's a lot more we could do, but here's something that we know we can do. We can restore this microbe load. Now, one thing I don't know how to do, though. So if your mom gave you Lactobacillus rotari as you passed through the birth canal at birth or during breastfeeding or contact as an infant, you would have that microbe for a lifetime if you never got exposed to antibiotics and glyphosate and other factors. When we restore Rotari, let's say through yogurt or probiotic caps or whatever means, you have it for maybe 10 days. Why? Why the difference? Well, I think it's because when you replace microbes are like us. They live in communities, and they have friends and neighbors and coworkers, and we don't know what the friends of Rotari look like. But I think in future we'll say something like this. Okay, when you replace Rotari, replace it with these five other microbes that are part of its supportive community, and it will take up residence for the rest of your life, barring, once again, exposure to antibiotics and other factors. But right now, we don't know how to do that. So what we do is we restore it, but you keep on restoring it until we figure this out.
If the worst thing that happens to me is I make your yogurt and I have to eat yogurt every day for the rest of my life, hey, I love Great Yogurt. What's not to like? I'll eat Great Yogurt every day and try to get my friends to eat Great Yogurt.
Have we talked about the SIBO yogurt?
No. SIBO is a whole other conversation I have. So yes, please do.
So a lot of people are not aware that about half the U.S. population, about 150, 160 million Americans, have allowed fecal microbes like E. coli and Salmonella to overproliferate in the colon where they're supposed to be, but then ascend into the 24 feet of small intestine. This is called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And that's happened because of all those exposures we talked about, antibiotics, glyphosate, et cetera, that have killed off beneficial microbes. That allows those fecal microbes to ascend into the 24 feet of small intestine. Well, the small intestine is very permeable. That's where we absorb nutrients. But when fecal microbes take up residence there, they live and die very rapidly. Microbes have a lifetime of about 3 hours, just a few hours, where they die rapidly and release their toxic components. One of them is called endotoxin. And that endotoxin enters the bloodstream. That process is called endotoxemia. That process can show up as migraine headaches, depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, Parkinson's disease. Can show up as heart disease, coronary disease, atrial fibrillation, skin disease like rosacea or psoriasis or eczema, or bone and joint pains like fibromyalgia or rheumatoid arthritis. We have to reconsider virtually all human health in light of the contribution of the microbiome with this new appreciation of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and endotoxemia. Well, how do you get rid of this? Well, if you go to the conventional gastroenterologist, if he even knows what it is, and most of the time they will not, but even if he or she does know, they'll hand you a prescription for Xifaxan. It's an antibiotic. We know, Richard, antibiotics got us here. Do we want another antibiotic? Yeah. And the success rate of this antibiotic is about 55 to 60%. So I asked some different questions. I asked these questions. Now, wait a minute. If you just took a conventional off-the-shelf probiotic, will this process, SIBO, go away? It will not. It might reduce bloating and diarrhea a little bit transiently, but won't get rid of it. So I asked these questions. What if we chose microbes that are known to colonize the small intestine? Most microbes don't do that. That is healthy microbes. What if we chose microbes that produce what are called bacteriocins? These are natural antibiotics that kill off fecal microbes. So I chose three. A strain of Lactobacillus reuteri, our friend, a cousin, Lactobacillus gasseri, and another microbe, Bacillus coagulans. These are microbes that live in the small intestine, unusual, and produce bacteriocins, tons of bacteriocins. So far, anecdotally, in 50 people who've done this, 90% have converted to negative. There's a way to test for SIBO with a device. And so far, it's been more successful than even the antibiotic. We will plan a formal clinical trial to validate this. But you know, Richard, if the solution to getting rid of this huge problem for health involves something drastic, like surgical removal of the small intestine, well, we better be damn confident this is really necessary. But what if the solution is something that looks and smells like yogurt that you make in your kitchen and has no side effects, only side benefits, like smoother skin and restoration of muscle and better social attitudes? Well, I don't think you have to be quite so confident. In fact, I would encourage people just to make this yogurt, even if they don't have SIBO, because what we're really doing is restoring keystone or very foundational microbes that bring back order and health to your microbiome.
I think it's, you know, like I said, you're a cardiologist. And I'm not, just that you're here now still blows me away that you're down to this, you know, it's simple only because you've been doing it for the past, since when I started talking to you in 2013. You're saying that we could take these three microbes, get them into our systems, and possibly clear people of SIBO, which is mind-blowing because there's so much SIBO imbalance that it's just, wow, we could possibly have benefit just from that and with no real harm. As you said, the side effects. It was actually Andrew Weil that taught me there are no such things as side effects. He just says they're all effects.
That's
and
good.
I like that. And so the other effects are your skin might look more radiant. You might be happier. You might be kinder. You might be more generous. You might feel better. Your gut isn't going to be cranky all the time. All that. It's like, wow, that's some effects that I want.
You know, Richard,
go ahead.
That if we rely on John Q. Primary Care on the corner
or the
neighborhood gastroenterologist, you'll hear none of this. It takes at least a generation, I think more like two generations for something as complex as this. But it's important for your listeners to know you don't have to wait for your doctor to become educated. You know, if you go to take your car to the auto repair shop, do you really need to educate the mechanic? He should know what to do. But in healthcare, the doctors often, though they pose as experts, are not. All they have are pharmaceuticals and procedures, medical procedures, but they don't have an understanding of basic health involving nutrition, supplements lacking in modern life, microbiome. And so it becomes really our job, you, me, and your listeners, to take the reins and understand these things. And the good thing is these are not that difficult. Once you get it's a little bit scary at first. And there's a few dollars, but not a lot, to spend. And you can have magnificent control over multiple facets of health.
And you can feel better. There are very few people I know, and it's not just because of the world I'm in. I mean, I know a lot of regular people, and there are very few of them that get up every day and go, I feel great. There's always an ache, especially as we get older. You know, there's more achy, there's more cranky, there's more, you know, and especially because you have a lean towards sarcopenia, because you've been on too many antibiotics and too much weight loss, that, you know, there's more crankiness, there's more cranky joints, there's more cartilage issues, there's all sorts of stuff. So the worst possible scenario, if we take a formula like this one with the Ruteri and Gastri, we're going to feel better. Wow. Feel better. That alone could sell millions. Feel better. Dot, dot, dot.
And, you know, there's other benefits we haven't even talked about. It seems almost too good to be true. But what we're really doing is we're not treating things. That's a concept I ask people to get away from. That is, in the conventional world, you have a high blood sugar. We're going to treat you to reduce that blood sugar. But you never got at the cause of that high blood sugar. And by the way, those causes are easy to address. Likewise, heart disease, coronary disease. It's easy to address the causes and get rid of your risk for cardiovascular disease, but it should not involve cholesterol, should not involve statin cholesterol drugs. It involves nutrition and addressing the factors that cause heart disease. A whole other conversation, of course. But people really do. We're reaching a time where people have extraordinary control over their health. But the sad fact is the last person you ask understand this is the doctor. Shouldn't be that way, but it is that way.
But then we have rebels like you who are out there pounding the pulpit and getting us educated and making, so far in the small study that you've done, women extraordinarily happy about their skin. And I lost 3 inches of my waist. I don't care about that. My skin is fabulous. You know, it's wow, what a win-win-win. Everybody's happy and they're happier.
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things that concerns a lot of us is even prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a sharp increase in suicide. Between 2005 and 2015, there was a 35% increase in suicide, which is huge. And, of course, many more attempted suicides. And so is the restoration of Ruteri, for instance, and thereby a boost in oxytocin, is that part of the solution? I think it is. That has yet to be proven. It's a tough thing to prove in that world. How do you prove prevention of suicide, right? It's not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Or the SIBO yogurt, because we know that endotoxemia is a major driver of suicidal thoughts and depression. You know, there's a German group. I give them credit. They had the nerve to take healthy, non-depressed volunteers and inject them in the blood with that endotoxin, and gave them endotoxemia, which is very scary because if you miscalculate the dose even a little bit, you can kill somebody. It's a poison. So they inject this toxic endotoxin into the bloodstream of these non-depressed people. And within 3 hours, they were clinically depressed. And when they performed MRI of their brains during depression, they showed all the MRI hallmarks of depression, arguing that SIBO and endotoxemia is a major driver of suicide and depression.
Wow. Yeah, I don't see a drug rep wandering around talking about this.
That's right.
I just don't. There was a woman, Stephanie Olson. That's not quite right, but it's close. And she had been a drug rep for years. And a successful one, really good at what she did, really knew. And she talked about, in the book she wrote, she talked about how she was really trained to be, I would call it spy-like characteristics, meaning how to really get herself into the doctor's life in the sense of remembering the kids' birthdays and the anniversaries and the gift and bringing special things to the kids and, you know, really staying, really getting enmeshed into their life so that when they came in, and she trained other drug reps, they were really more as much a family friend as they were a drug rep. So that further enhanced the, you know, doc, we have this new thing and I think you'd really like it. You should try it. Boom. Well, she wrote this book, you know, a tell-all book about how that worked in the world of drugs, wrote the book and then left the country. And is still living somewhere else happily. But it was an amazing story to hear how she really, how in her world, not only of doing it for, I think she did it for almost 15 years, how she was the resource for the doctor for information. That she was really the educator of the doctor as a drug rep. That was where the doctors were getting their education, partially because of how she was trained and how she trained other drug reps to really get into that sort of familiar-like feeling. So you were a trusted resource. But, I mean, it's a whole spooky game of, and that's why she left the country, because she knew it was could end badly for her. Because of what she was saying. And
that is so true, because I lived through it. You know, when I finished my training and began practice, I grew up as a very poor kid. So when I finally was making money in practice and good looking, very persuasive, charming reps would come to you with promises of gifts and being your friend. At first, I took it hook, line, and sinker until I started to realize this is not right. But you're right, they're very good at it.
In one of my restaurants that I was a chef at, it was a small bistro in Carmel, and a drug rep would come in and buy the restaurant for the evening, meaning about 35 seats, and buy the restaurant for the evening so that they could have doctors come in and they could wine and dine them and leave them with gold pens and all sorts of, you know, tea times at Pebble Beach. And I mean, it was an amazing machine to watch. How when the doctors left, they were just slightly buzzed, perhaps, on the alcohol and the dying and the charm of and the food was lovely, and it was a magical evening, blah, 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 blah. But it was really about the drugs. It was to get them, you know, get them those tea times at Pebble Beach so that they'd even feel more inclined to, like, oh, yes, this is a wonderful drug. I had a great time. I have nothing but positive thoughts about it. There was no real education about anything other than we're having a lovely time and the drug reps are paying for this. It's
amazing.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly how it works. And, you know, it's even worse when you're in a procedure specialty like cardiology or cardiothoracic surgery or general surgery or one of the specialties where you require a lot of equipment, imaging equipment, catheters, trocars, cutting devices, drills, all that kind of stuff. Well, that's even bigger than the pharmaceutical industry, the medical device industry. And they're extremely well-funded. And they really wind and dine. But they're exactly right. It's not about education. It's about marketing. It's cleverly disguised marketing. And that is how most physicians are educated. And so while in parallel to all this, you and I are talking about wonderfully empowering things in nutrition and the microbiome, and the doctor it's not even on his radar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really shocking. I know when we first started talking way back at the wheat belly days, I had already been anti-wheat because I knew too much about the sprays and just all the, even back then, and how wheat itself is a mess because of what we've done to it. And I'd already been in that world of, you know, no wheat. I ate high protein, a lot of that stuff. But it was really amazing to me how, you know, here we are, you know, you started in 2013 talking about this, and now you're at a point where people can make yogurt and get amazing benefits from making their own yogurt. Or with the, you know, that the women have taken as a trial study and find the crow's feet going away. And for them, the other effect is, oh my God, I lost 3 inches of my waist. I didn't even try to do that. I mean, how great is that? That's a great hook right there. That's what you should be selling the product as. Unintentionally lose 3 inches of waist. Because, wow.
I think it's the start of a new age, Richard, where you don't need your doctor to you don't have to ask your doctor, hey, doc, should I make Lactobacillus rotari yogurt? Of course, the doctor says, I have no idea what you're talking about. Did you consult Dr. Google again? Right?
Yeah.
So you don't need the doctor's approval. You don't need the doctor's approval to have magnificent musculature, slenderness, metabolic health, protection from dementia and heart disease and diabetes, because the doctor doesn't know. The doctor, if you have prediabetes, he's got his prescription pad ready for a prescription for metformin or Byetta or, heaven forbid, insulin. Insulin is an extremely harmful way to control your blood sugar because it causes explosive weight loss and accelerates the damage to your organs. Yet the American Diabetes Association will tell people, it's not a loss. It's not a bad thing to go on insulin. It's a good thing. That's ridiculous. So this is the world we're up against, Richard. And so that's why I applaud people like you who are trying to broadcast these messages, because it's not coming from major media, by the way. It's coming from those of us who are unafraid and just want to speak the truth, because the truth is not coming through the media anymore, the major media, nor is it coming from my colleagues.
Yeah. And we only have a couple of minutes. Well, we can go long if this happens. But I wanted to ask you about, this is not exactly in this, it's in the gut category. It's not in the, crow's feet going away. But I've heard you talk about fungals can be a real issue, or fungus can be a real issue in the gut. And I heard you talk about, and I'm also in the Wayback Machine, Master Herbalist, and I heard you talking about berberine and essential oils for some bit of fungal management in the gut, because I did research with Orion Truss, who was the first, one of the first doctors to write about fungal imbalance in the gut. And as people are cleaning up their gut, and as you're adding rutari and these other microbes, can fungus be bumped out, or do you have to do other things such as the berberine or these essential oils to get fungus back into balance?
You know, fungal overgrowth, whether it's in the colon or has ascended like SIBO into the 24 feet of small bowel, is a really tough problem to deal with. And we don't have the full tools nor the information that we have with bacterial overgrowth. So, for instance, there's a consumer device called the AIRE device, A-I-R-E, and I have no relationship with them. The company is called Food Marble. And a PhD engineer invented this device to measure hydrogen gas in the breath. And it serves as essentially a mapping device to tell you where bacteria are living. Are they living where they're supposed to be living, in the colon, or are they living in the stomach and duodenum and jejunum where they don't belong? That's SIBO. So for SIBO, for bacterial overgrowth, we're getting better and better tools. Unfortunately, the same thing has not yet happened with fungal overgrowth, but it's becoming clear that part of, if you allow fungi like Candida albicans, Candida glabrata, Malassezia, if we allow those fungal species to proliferate, it's because you lost the suppressive effects of bacteria. So SIBO and SIFO go hand, small intestinal fungal overgrowth go hand in hand. But unfortunately, the only way to identify that with confidence is stool analysis. It has problems. Stool analysis is a one testing, is rectal test, which is the last, inch or so of your gastrointestinal tract, and doesn't really necessarily reflect what's going on in the ascending colon or transverse colon or in the ileum or other parts of the small intestine. So we have to accept that stool testing is rectal testing. His name is Dr. Raul Cano. He's a 40-year academic microbiologist, and he did something remarkable. He took the entire bowel movement that people would have, homogenized it, mixed it, and then studied it and compared it to the rectal testing. And he found there was very little overlap. So clearly, there's so much more we have yet to learn and how to understand what's going on in the microbiome. But with fungal overgrowth, the only tool we have is to look at your stool sample for an excess of these fungal species. If you have them, part of the solution has to be rebuilding the bacterial microbiome, and rotari, gastri can be part of that. By the way, one thing I haven't mentioned is the power of fermented foods like kimchi and kefir and kombucha and veggies you ferment on your kitchen counter. Extremely powerful and a very powerful way to help rebuild your microbiome. And by the way, for the ladies listening, get better skin health too. So,
once again,
but fungal overgrowth, once it becomes established, Richard, is really persistent. But it looks, a lot of the symptoms are the same as bacterial overgrowth, bloating, diarrhea. The one thing that seems to distinguish fungal overgrowth is this crazy sugar cravings. Fungi love sugar, and they somehow tell your brain to eat sugar, which is amazing when you think about it. Somehow fungi have evolved in the human body, and no one's identified the metabolite yet. They somehow produce a metabolite that tells you, go eat some candy or go have some Rocky Road ice cream. But as you point out, what we do for fungal overgrowth is we resort to some antifungal factors, like berberine's a really good one. Some of the food-sourced essential oils. I urge anybody who wants to do this to learn more about these things, because like the essential oils can be very caustic, very toxic, unless used properly. You want to use them safely or else they can have harmful effects. So for instance, we might get oil of oregano or cinnamon or clove oil, take a couple of drops and dilute them in, say, a tablespoon of avocado or olive oil, and do it that way. It takes longer also. And so the die-off effect as you kill them can cause panic attacks, anxiety. So people get quite scared. So you want to start this process with knowledge and know how to cut back on some of the upfront die-off symptoms, which you can do by cutting back in the dose. You can also take something like activated charcoal, and it binds up some of the toxins. So there's a lot to know if someone embarks on that routine. So I urge them to learn more about it first. One of the sources would be my Super Gut book.
And the good news, I think, with doing the L-Ruteri yogurt or the formula, the encapsulated formula, is that you're going to have a healthy microbiome. So as you're fighting off the fungus overgrowth, I think the gut is going to be more inclined to want to cooperate with you.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. You know, one thing I urge people hear this and they say, oh, I listened to Richard's show. This is too complicated. I can't be bothered. I got other things in my plate, right? I got a mortgage to pay and all that.
Yeah.
Well, what's the price we pay? Richard, what's the price we pay if we don't take action to address, say, the SIBO? That's extremely common. The fungal overgrowth, also very common. What if we just say, ah, heck with it. I'll deal with some of the bloating, no big deal. Well, the long-term consequences could include multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, dementia, cognitive impairment, panic attacks, depression, suicide, colon cancer, lymphoma. In other words, we're not talking about just having some constipation or lack of regularity. We're talking about serious life-shortening processes. But once you get that, and once you embrace some of the very basic things we're talking about, like SIBO yogurt, come on, yogurt, right? Fermented foods. You can even buy some fermented foods now. It's not that big a deal. And yet you're given huge control over your future health. So I tell people, don't bury your head in the sand over this.
It's only your life. I mean, have a healthy, you know, having a healthy life is way more fun than having a not healthy life.
Right.
So I don't know. It's not said very well, bad marketing, but the idea is, you know, that's back to the yogurt, the Ruteri yogurt, to have more happiness. Jeez, how horrible is that? I'm happier. Wow. I love that idea. That is so great. I have one sort of a footnote warning that I have seen some of the fermented foods. I won't name the companies, but I have seen some where they've been pasteurized. And I'm thinking, well, does that seem stupid? So I would suggest to everybody avoid pasteurized, any of the fermented foods, whether it be kimchi or whatever you're looking for. Just make sure that it hasn't been snuck somewhere on the label. Because wouldn't that kill most everything in the bottle? You then have vegetables that are fermented, but the pathogens are killed by pasteurization?
Yeah, if the food is pasteurized after being fermented, you're exactly right. You're going to kill the microbes. Another innocent mistake people make is they make a smoothie with their blender and the blender kills not all, but a lot of the microbes. So we do have to pay attention to certain things. If you're going to ferment vegetables on your kitchen counter, for instance, we're going to make a brine that is water with salt, but we're going to have to filter the water. We don't want chlorine or fluoride in it. We're going to use non-iodized salt because we don't want iodine in it. And you don't want produce that has such things as coatings on it, like wax coatings on cucumbers, because it will ferment. It won't ferment because it's blocking the fermentation, the reproduction of microbes resident on the surface of that vegetable. By the way, it's a lot easier if you want to go a little faster and get better results if you buy a starter culture. So there are companies that sell starter cultures. And by the way, once you make a fermented food, whether it's yogurt or kefir or fermented cucumbers, you make the next batch from a little of the prior batch. So there's a little bit of maybe an upfront investment to buy that microbe or buy those vegetables, but then you make subsequent batches from a prior batch. And so you long term, it costs very little to do this.
I think it would have been amazing during COVID if instead of everybody talking about their starter, everybody had started talking about fermented foods. That would have been amazing. That would have been a great thing to have happened. Just great. Well, Doctor, that went faster than I thought it would, as always. And where would you like people to find out more about your the yogurt, the Inner Circle, and I'll post in the show notes where people can find out more information about that. Is there some place where they can read about that study done with the women, the trial study?
We didn't publish the study, Richard, just because it was a skin study and we had some technical difficulties. But the great thing is we came out with this unexpected finding. We're going to repeat it. You know, I'm not a dermatologist, so it was my first skin study. So there's some refinement, but we will do it again. So we don't have that made public. But if people want to know more, the Super Gut book is a good starting place. It's got the recipes for all these yogurts. By the way, so we're talking a lot about Reuteri, but there's many other microbes that have other very beneficial effects for children, for infants, for adults, for teenagers. You can do all sorts of things with these microbes. So it's a really exciting time. So that's all in the Super Gut book. My website, the umbrella website, is drdavisinfinitehealth.com. And people will find several thousand blog posts there, several hundred thousand discussion forum posts. And we also have a two-way Zoom, typically once a week, where we talk about all these kinds of things in a two-way conversation. And then I won't mention the product because I don't want to have any regulatory angles, but there is information you can get on the product that encapsulates these four components.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. That was fun as always.
Thank you, Richard. My pleasure. Good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.